Brendan.
Idly hoodly, Alan.
Welcome to an on-time and under-budget version of the Not a Thing podcast.
Wait, there's a budget?
Yeah, I guess. You know, those guests don't just come on for nothing, right?
They come on for bitcoins.
Yeah. Oh, I saw something just yesterday, actually, that was about Litecoin. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's technologically similar. It might even be the same set of algorithms as Bitcoin, but they change the way that the coins are verified, so it's more friendly for... well, it's not necessarily more friendly. It's just less... specific to a whatever processor you're using, so it's more egalitarian about how they're created or verified. I don't know if it would actually make Bitcoin, or you know, that it's its own currency. I don't know if it would make it more acceptable. It makes it easier to make them, but I don't know if that means that it's necessarily less weird to use them. It's still really weird, I think, to use Bitcoins. Although I did see a brick and mortar store that that you could pay for stuff in Bitcoin. So Koopa Cafe in Palo Alto, it's like a hot chocolate place. It's very
hot chocolate place?
Yeah.
That's a thing.
I guess. And so hot chocolate. And you could pay Bitcoin. I don't know what the exchange rate is, and I don't know if you can buy Bitcoins there, but I found that kind of interesting. Anyway, moving on. We have a few things this week that are interesting, and we're going to get to a bit of a talk about Man of Steel when we get to the spoilery section. We've been putting it off for a little while because we had a guest last week, and we weren't all 100% caught up, but now we are, so we're going to kick that in. But we're going to jump in on a video that made the rounds this weekend for Mobius Superconductors. And the deal was that some scientists made a... you know, it's always a good thing when you start the story with some scientists made, right?
That's how most of our stories start, right?
Right. And so they made a Mobius strip, which, if you don't know, is essentially just a loop of whatever with a half twist in it. And so what happens is if you trace a line down the entire thing, you end up covering all the sides of it in one pass. So you don't have to flip it over to write on both sides of the paper if you make it out of paper. And it's the kind of thing that I always learned and I never fully understood like what it did. The one really cool thing is if you make one out of paper and then you cut it in half along that line that you made, it does not turn into two loops of paper. It's weird. What? It's very weird. You should all try it. It's actually really awesome. You get one strip of paper that's twisted twice, I think. It's magic. It's science magic. Anyway, this scientist took that bit of science magic and then applied another bit of science magic to it, which was superconductors. So metals that taking metals always have some amount of resistance when you're passing heat or electricity through them to conduct whatever. So even if it's a wire and you pass some electricity through it, it's going to heat up and you'll lose some of the electricity on the other end of the wire. So superconductors are metals, and there can be ordinary metals that are cooled down like hundreds of degrees to the point where they there's something weird that happens, and this is, you know, the science part. They're trying to figure out what that weird thing is, but they turn into superconductors, which means they have almost zero resistance when they're passing electricity through. And the neat thing about that is you can use them for, you know, just to replace regular conductors and things, and they'll just be more efficient and faster, etc., etc. The other upside to this, and this was what was in the video, and the reason we're bringing it up is because the scientist does a really good job of explaining superconducting and magnets and stuff like that. I just found it fascinating. But the thing about superconductors is they're so efficient at dealing with electricity that one of the other properties of metals and electricity is when you run an electric current through metal, it creates a magnetic field. And conversely, if you move a piece of metal near a magnet, it creates an electric field. So what people have figured out is that if you can do the right set of things to a superconductor in the presence of a magnet, it will actually hold its position away from that thing, like two magnets repelling each other, except it, instead of just repelling, it will repel and hold and like pull at the same time, so it holds whatever position you set it in. So in this case, they made essentially a maglev, a little magnet that floats over the track, and it floats over it, but because it's that Mobius strip that has that half twist in it, when it goes around the corner, it's suddenly underneath the track. So gravity is working against it, but now instead of pushing away and floating, it's pulling it. It's really cool. The science is a little hard to grasp, but it's actually explained really well. It's one of my favorite explanations of superconductors.
You can make super advanced roller coasters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's lots of other scientific applications.
Well, you know, essentially it's a near frictionless surface, right? You're the only thing that's stopping you is air. So it you don't have to push it very hard because there's nothing slowing it down other than the air. You could just push it once and it would get to the other end. So, I mean,
do you think people who do
with very little propulsion sounds pretty cool.
Do you think people who do curling would like that or not like that?
I would say not like that because
make it very challenging.
Yeah.
Or you could do space curling.
Space curling could be okay, although I think as long as you wear the Norwegian team's pants, everything is okay with curling. Did you ever see those?
I don't recall.
They were this, like, amazing, distracting plaid. I'm going to have to look them up because they were awesome. They saved the sport from obscurity in...
I don't know. Curling's still pretty obscure.
It is. Although when I was in Canada for a week for work and just walking around, I went past the local ice rink and everyone was doing curling that day. I mean, it wasn't being used as just general skating. It was people doing curling. So that was kind of wacky. I'd never seen curling in front of me before, so that was... You know, it's not a special effect. People actually do that.
Man, it must be boring. I mean, a wonderful national sport of a proud country.
It was Canada Day yesterday, so, you know.
Oh, well then screw Canada. It's not Canada Day anymore. It's almost America Day.
Yeah, it's America Day in 2 days. America. Fuck yeah.
Oh, our composer for the podcast
has
started a petition to have the national anthem of the United States be changed to America, fuck yeah. So look out for that petition. Maybe we should throw it up on the show notes.
Sounds good.
Try and get some traction going for that.
Sounds good. Francis Scott Key can suck it.
Yeah, he's old and dead. That song's bullshit. I mean, I love that song, but you know... It's not the glory that is America. Fuck yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
Usher in a new era of American exceptionalism.
Well, I think we're already in that new era. I mean, there was some news released recently that American drones, I think they're mostly American drones, if not completely, but American or allied forces. What are they called now? What do we call ourselves in... We'd come
we don't. That's how the media covers it. We don't call it anything.
Anyway, there was a report released recently that drone strikes now officially have killed more people, at least in the last year, than the manned aircraft strikes in the same kind of amount of time. So, yeah, if anyone should be worried about drones, or if you want to start worrying about drones, now's probably a pretty good time. That's kind of a disturbing stat. I don't know the actual hard numbers for it, but it's still pretty crazy. I mean, it's the future of warfare, I guess, or something.
Well, the position of the president's administration is that it's safer. It reduces civilian casualties because they're more accurate. But now this report's coming out, and actually, statistically, it's not.
Well, it's certainly not safer for the people being targeted by the drones.
No. Well, that's the idea, is that, oh, well, a drone can target better than a fighter jet.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. There's
maybe because fighter jets are piloted by people who have trained for years and years before they're even allowed to get into a plane. And drones are driven by people who, I don't know who drives those, but the qualifications aren't as high.
They play video games.
Yeah. The people with high gamer scores.
Right. Those gamer scores are all fake. You know that, right? On
especially
Xbox.
If you drink Mountain Dew. You can just turn in for points.
I've always thought that was the most ridiculous, like, thing. Like, they have a similar thing in the PlayStation Network, and it's based on, you know, your achievements in the games. So, like, if you're playing a game and I'm playing the game, if I have more achievements than you, then, yeah, maybe I've done more than you in the game. But if I buy two games and even play it once, I've already gotten, like, way more points than you just because I've bought another game. So it's like, oh, so if I buy a whole lot of games, I can increase my score. Yes,
just like when you're playing a video game, you increase your score. What does it mean? Absolutely nothing.
Yes. Oh, it's gaming. It's good. It's good, but it's really just gaming. Just don't read into it as much as everyone is out there on the internet. That's not
a kill streak. That's a totally different thing. I mean,
got to be able to call in that helicopter.
Yeah.
Actually, what is it now? I don't know. The last Call of Duty I played was Modern Warfare 3, maybe.
That's the last one I bought.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't play Ghosts at all. So I've certainly not played Ghosts 2. Is that out? Or am I?
No, Ghosts hasn't come out yet.
Golly. So, oh, I'm sorry. Black Ops 2?
Black Ops 2.
Black Ops 2. Right. Yeah, I missed Black Ops. I missed that whole, like, thing. Oops. And there's a pen. That's fine.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yes, where
this
we drop pens.
Podcast, Alan.
Where we drop pens and don't. I don't have a cough button nor a pen drop.
A pen button?
No. No. I don't have any of that. It's really kind of a shoddy operation.
We should talk to our budget manager.
Yeah. Right, exactly. As we were talking about earlier, it's kind of rough. I mean, that's why this show was under budget, essentially, because I had to drop that pen, and we didn't have a button to save.
That was our only pen, Alan. How could you do that?
Well, I hope no one was listening to that on the new headphone implants that just came out this last week. Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm 3 for 3 so far. I think we're gonna
nicely
keep it.
Done.
But there was a story about implanting a speaker. I mean, essentially a headphone in that part of your ear that kind of sticks out over the canal. I know there's a name for it, but I don't know what that is.
The useless part?
Yeah. I actually...
No, it probably does have some use.
I heard someone describe it, but that's only because they had a piercing there, which I think is not a thing, but, you know, to each their own. I think if you want to poke holes in yourself, that's fine. It's not...
If you're going to poke holes in yourself, you should put a speaker in there.
It should be functional. It should not
yes.
be merely decorative. So the deal is that you could put a speaker there, and the you can't obviously, I mean, I guess you could run wires out of it, but the deal is that it would be small enough, and the circuitry would be such that you could power it slightly remotely, so you would have to wear like a thing which would induce
like
a magnetic
necklace.
Field nearby, you know, going back to that superconductor thing, but you induce a magnetic field, and that's enough electricity to make a signal, and then you would have to have something that transmitted a signal to it. It's not exactly Bluetooth, but it's close. So you have a headphone that you can implant under your skin, and you can use, I mean, the article that we found, which we'll link, you know, had a bunch of applications for it. Like, you could use it as another sensor for things, like you could hear your own heartbeat, or you could use it to tell what temperature is nearby or something like that. I just think they overlook the most obvious use of it, which is a headphone. So you can listen to just music wherever you are, no matter what was going on. I think that would be cool. You know, that personal soundtrack thing.
Until it breaks.
Yeah.
And then it's stuck on, I'm not going to say the name of some earworm song, because that would be evil and cruel. But, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That would be really, really bad, I think. I think it's an interesting idea, and good for them for fitting something in that small of a space. The applications for it probably need to be worked on a little bit, but...
I did like that the guy wanted to hook a Geiger counter up to it because he lives in Nevada and he said there's radiation everywhere.
Right.
Like, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah, I think it would have to be something that maybe wouldn't trigger all the time.
Yeah,
but...
it's like, oh, I'm going to die.
Right.
Getting cancer right now. I can hear the tumors growing in me.
It would just turn you into someone very, very paranoid. So that's maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, headphone implants, not for hypochondriacs.
But an interesting kind of countermeasure to the headphones is another article about the first telescopic contact lens, which I guess is I have a you know, caveat about it, but only because of the way they describe it. So the deal is that you get a contact lens, and they're able to make them as thick or as thin, I guess, as the non-gas permeable lenses, which I guess I don't have contacts, so I don't know any of this technology, but I guess
yeah, I don't either.
Essentially, they're the ones that don't flex, so they're kind of the old school ones, which I guess are still used by people, but they're kind of, you know, uncomfortable to wear, et cetera, et cetera. But the deal is that there's a bit of a lens around the center of it, not the very center of it, but around the center, and they refract light, you know, pretty much like a telescope would or any other kind of thing, and it gives you something like, I forget what the stat was, but it was essentially like three times what your normal vision would be. And the part that I find a little disturbing is that it's full time. So if you have the contact lens in, you see everything at three times closer than what it like should be. And the way that they get around that is, so you don't have to take the contact out, is you put a pair of glasses on, or sunglasses, or something, that have a polarizing filter on it, so it's probably sunglasses, and that they make, that's why they make the center of it not magnifying. So you can look through the very center of it, but obviously you can't look through the center and the outside at the same time. So when you wear the sunglasses, it filters out just the magnifying part of the lens, so you only see the normal view. So essentially, you have to wear sunglasses all the time to do kind of normal stuff, and then when you want to, like, you know, be a creeper and look at something really far away, you take your sunglasses off.
Well, at least that'll help us identify the creepy people out there. Or suspicious right. characters.
Actually, that makes sense, right? If you're a creepy, suspicious person, then you're the kind of person wearing sunglasses all the time. This yeah, actually...
Not the only people who wear sunglasses are creepy people, right?
But you'd be wearing sunglasses, like, indoors and at night and all sorts of stuff.
No, if you're wearing sunglasses indoors and you don't have some sort of condition... Or you just didn't get your eyes just got dilated.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you should be mocked.
Yeah. But can you imagine they combine these things, right? So you have your sunglasses that you can take off and you can see really far, and then the thing in your ear so you can hear like long distances too. You know, it's kind of got a thing going on. You can Oh, you know what it is? It's totally Superman. Right? He wears the glasses. He's Clark Kent. He takes the glasses off. He can see really far, and you get all this stuff. Oh, it's
but crazy. those are kind of Superman's lesser powers.
Yeah,
I'd rather have heat vision or flight or invincibility, super speed.
Well, we're working on it, I guess. I
guess it's the perviest parts of his powers.
Yeah. Right. An interesting thing, right? Like, if you don't have invincibility, if you break your arm or your leg or anything like that, normally you have to be immobilized in a cast. And one thing that came out this week was a 3D printed cast. So it's based on an X-ray and then your actual measurements of your body, and it would be printed so that it fits, you know, snugly on your skin, but it doesn't completely like wrap it up like a cast would. So in the show notes, we'll link it, but it looks like kind of a web kind of structure.
It looks like a prop from Star Trek: The Next Generation.
It's the crystalline entity.
Yeah, kind of.
But it essentially just covers the bone that would have been broken, and immobilizes it. But it does it in an intelligent kind of way because it doesn't cover all of your skin. It's a loose kind of web again, and so that means that it's more breathable in theory. So you know, and hopefully
and it's
not
lighter.
As crazy itchy.
Or if it is, you can get to the itchy parts because
right.
there's holes in it.
Right, right. And then the
a little
other
harder
thing,
to sign.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to have like a really fine pen or something. But the thing that I liked most about it is that it supports your bone or the broken bone or immobilizes it essentially as efficiently as possible. So they're not, you don't have like this thing, you know, like stuck on your body, and it'll
you
actually
have an
support
art project
it
on your arm.
Right, it'll actually support it more based on your actual bone structure. So, you know, it's not that one size fits all, which I think is really the mantra of 3D printing, is that it's not one size fits all. It's however you want it, exactly as you want it.
Customization.
So, yeah.
Theme of the podcast,
for
as
sure.
usual.
There are certain recurring themes on this podcast, that is one of them. If you're a new listener, welcome. We're glad to have you.
Learn to count.
Yes.
Episode one. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but thank you for listening. We're getting up there. It's long in the tooth for episodes now. I it's so funny because I say this, you know, I've been saying this for the last few episodes, and I still cannot remember what episode we're in during the episode.
we're in our 40s.
It's in the 40s. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't remember exactly where we are, but I hope we will do something interesting for the year. Should probably figure that out before it just comes up and we have nothing.
We'll just do for the 1 year anniversary. Well, we already had the idea of having all our previous guests on at the same time.
Yeah.
Or conversely, we could have a completely silent podcast and see how long people will sit and listen to. We'll record, but we just won't say anything. Or we could type back and forth. Turn on the mics and then do it all via chat.
All you hear is the typing on the keyboard.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. Clackcast. All typing. The all typing podcast. It's going to be my new spinoff.
It's our thing. It's a thing. What else is happening this week? Oh, before we get to
you could do a podcast that's all one handed typing. It's a commentary podcast for pornography.
Wow, that's really specific.
Not gonna happen. Just an idea.
Okay.
Maybe not a thing.
Yeah, this is how the podcast grows. We explore new ideas. We kind of brainstorm and go out, and then we eventually narrow it down, and that is our focus for the future. Heard it here first. Not a
they can't podcast. They can't all be good eggs.
Oh golly! So one thing that I know is we probably could have mentioned last week when our friend
really
Ted was
have.
On, but whatever, he didn't bring it up either, so it's his own fault.
Yeah, we'll blame him.
Yes. The Tour de France is on again this year. I don't know if you're big fans of cycling, but one of the fun articles that I found this week was something from bicycling.com, which is it was an article about the average kind of everyday bike rider, which I don't know how they created that average. I think they just kind of interviewed like the one or two other people that were in the office at the time, but they showed the average speed on a flat, or the average speed, you know, in the mountains that a rider would be likely to do, and then compared those and a bunch of other stats to the Tour de France riders, and it's pretty wild. I think one of my favorite stats in the whole thing is, you know, the average speed on a flat terrain for kind of their baseline is like 17 or 18 miles an hour, and the tour rider is going, you know, 25 to 28 miles an hour. And I ride a little bit. I ride at least once a week, and I have kind of, you know, I try and put in like 9 or 10 miles every week per ride. And it's kind of a mix of road and kind of, you know, hard packed trail or soft trail and stuff. So there is one section of the trail that is paved. It's completely paved. So I should in theory be able to go, you know, really fast. It's a flat. And when I, you know, have the gears in the right place and I'm really cranking, I top out at maybe 21. So when
Which
I
is
see
as
this
fast
thing,
as they go uphill.
Right. That was the crazy thing. There was another stat, which was the average speed on mountainous terrain, and that one starts 21 and goes to 25. 25 miles an hour uphill. That's just nuts. I don't
know.
It's
like how fast my car goes. I do have a crappy car, but still.
Yeah, it's a wild set of stats. You know, you get a good appreciation of the riders. You know, whether your stance on doping or not, I know the Not a Thing podcast stance on it is one, but you know, as an expression of human endurance, it's still pretty impressive, even if you're crazy, you know, doped up or roided up or whatever the correct term is for someone that rides a bike and is otherwise assisted by chemicals and stuff. It's still kind of like hard work. You don't just do it, right? So, you know, watch the tour. It's cool.
I will start watching, as I do every year, about a week late. I always forget when it starts, and then I think, oh, yeah, Is that? Oh, it's already stage five. Okay. I guess I can get into it now.
Well, there's plenty to watch, so you'll
it
I'm
does
sure
go
you'll
on
be
for
okay.
a long time.
Yeah.
I'll be filling up my DVR and then fast forwarding through most of it.
I actually only heard about it because Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens, of all people, tweeted it. And the way he tweeted it was he tweeted it and had a link. And of course, instead of a link to, you know, footage of the tour or anything like that, it's the opening scene from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which is him on his crazy cruiser bike joining the, you know, essentially rushing past everyone on the tour, which is awesome. That movie still holds up. It's one of the good ones.
Agreed.
I think that is... yeah, that is all the non-spoiler news we wanted to talk about. We're going to jump right into spoiler land, so whatever spoiler alert noise you need to throw, we're talking about Man of Steel this week, which I saw, I guess, opening weekend, and you saw last week, is that right?
Yeah, I saw last week, a week out.
So where should we start? What did you think? What was your impression of it?
My impression of it when I first saw it was a lot stronger than it is now, and even then it was not that strong.
Okay. So you came with it kind of negative or just kind of neutral?
There's not a specific thing I can point to that makes me dislike it, but it didn't impress me.
Okay.
It was no Avengers.
Sure. Oh, yeah. It's nowhere near as coherent.
It was actually, I would say, it's no any of the Marvel films.
Is it a Spider-Man?
No.
Because I heard it compared to the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, just in the amount of time he spends not as Superman.
He spends a lot of time as Superman, or doing Superman stuff. Maybe
That's
not
true.
Wearing the costume.
Right. Yeah. I think that is an important distinction. I mean, there's a lot of, that's like a lot of the film is him wrestling with, should I be Superman or not? And it's like, yeah, duh, please, because we need this movie. Which, I mean, I think it was handled nicely. I mean, there's a lot more like that humanity in him struggle than what's been in a lot of films I guess Superman in general. So I think it's a good way to approach that is like, you know, look how much humanity he actually has versus, you know, Kryptonian. Yeah, Kryptonian he is. And I think that was kind of shortchanged about how they built it because of the way the story kind of flowed. I think it was a waste to not do more with that. That being said, I did like it. My main concern about it was that, it would be kind of your standard high gloss, no depth, Zack Snyder kind of movie. I think he showed a good amount of restraint, but actually all of my annoyances with the film come from the fact that, you know, Zack Snyder is doing it.
I mean, anything in particular that drew your ire?
Yeah, it's really just like Lois Lane as the movie starts is pretty badass. I mean, she is going where she should go. She, you know, is able to stand up to the people that are there. She'll be as tough as she needs to be to get her stuff done. She's relentless in figuring out who Superman is. And then when pretty much everything after she gets caught for knowing who Superman was is, yeah, it's very like standard damsel in distress mode. I didn't like a lot of her scenes kind of after that. Which is really par for the course, unfortunately, for Zack Snyder's kind of thing. He's very surface for women. The big one for me from Watchmen is it Silk Spectre, I think, is the main kind of female character. And in the comics, which I know comparing that movie to the comics is kind of not great, but it's inevitable. And when you do that, the Silk Spectre character is so much more kind of nuanced and about being a strong character and not purely eye candy as she really was in the movie. I mean, I feel like they even sexed up her costume for the movie over what it looked like for the comic, which was already pretty kind of, you're barely wearing clothes as at that point. But anyway, the other thing that I think is bad about the movie, and this is kind of more of a like Hollywood action problem, I think, versus a you know anything any other kind of thing, which is the final fight between, you know, Superman and Zod obviously has to be a pretty big fight, right? I mean, it's the these two guys, they you know the Kryptonian blood, so there's like the red sun or the yellow sun superpower, blah blah blah. So there's going to be a lot of stuff thrown around, and it's amazing the amount of collateral damage there is during the movie, which is pretty much unaddressed. Like Superman flies through a building, and there were it's probably not a completely empty building, and there's that thing that's destroying, you know, crazy creating those crazy gravity waves and destroying the planet for, you know, it seems like a long time, you know, enough time for planes to fly across, you know, wherever they were in, I guess they were in Kansas where the planes originally were to, you know, to Metropolis. I mean, I understand they never actually say where Metropolis is. It could be as close as it could be a lot closer than you know than I think it is. But you know, that's a lot of damage to buildings and the planet, etc., etc. And the thing that finally makes and no, this is again a little much. The thing that finally makes Superman kind of snap and, you know, literally snap Zod's neck is Zod is gonna burn, like, you know, this small family, like four people in a train station or whatever at the end of the fight. And I just found that kind of unreasonable, like the
It
amount
might as
of
well have been a kitten in a tree.
I mean, I think if the whole point of it was that he's picking humanity over like the Kryptonians. I mean, I think that point was kind of already established, right? He had already destroyed the Ark ship with all of the, you know, Kryptonian babies in it. And so it's pretty much at this point the only other shred of his kind of himself is Zod. But I've always found that the struggle for Superman and really all kind of the good guys in comics is that they don't kill people like ever. And it's the kind of thing where like if they do, then it has to be for a really good reason. And I just don't think that that was good enough reason. Sorry, that family in the in the train station. But I mean, if it were the kind of thing where, you know, he was struggling to fight Zod because there's a lot of collateral damage and he's trying to save everyone. I mean, that was the point of him like being Superman, was that, okay, I'm gonna save everyone. I'm gonna like no one is gonna get hurt. And that's not the case. I mean, he's being thrown, like I said, thrown through buildings and destroying stuff. And if it were like he was trying to save people, and it was just getting harder every time. Like there were more people. Zod was being much more like antagonistic towards people. that he has to actually choose between them, like over an amount of time, I could see that as being, you know, enough of a reason to do it. But I feel like in that split second, I mean, yes, he saved that family, but it just does not, it didn't feel, that's the only kind of big note that didn't feel right for me.
I will say, I liked the collateral damage.
No, I did
too.
I
thought that the fight scenes were good.
Yes.
And they actually represented well what a fight between two superpowered people would be.
Yeah, yeah, no,
we
I agree.
Haven't really seen in many movies, that's if right. any.
Especially a Superman film.
I mean, if we would expect them to be thrown that far. It wouldn't be, oh, we're in a room, I'm going to throw this guy against a wall.
Yeah.
You're going to go through the wall.
Right. So I agree with that, and I agree that all of the action looked really great. I just think that they shortchanged some of the kind of the I guess not mental anguish, but like emotional anguish of him, like through those scenes, like the scenes where he's clearly picking humanity over Krypton. I mean, I think that had to be much more in the forefront about what, you know, what was driving him, because it was so much at the beginning of the movie, you know, like look at his connection to humans, look at how much he wants to help people, and then it's just kind of, no, I'm just fighting this dude.
I think I would have rather watched a Zod movie than Superman.
The Zod
I really like the Kryptonians.
Yeah, the Zod really good. I agree. The when they do the flashback and he's talking about all the places he had to go and everything, it's like, oh, I want to hear more.
Yeah, I'd rather watch, you know, a movie with the build up to the fall of Krypton with Zod and Russell Crowe.
Yeah, I did really like everything on Krypton.
Yes,
the cool, like, what, I don't know, it's not exactly like live 3D printing of stuff, whatever you could call that, and the stuff about, you know, how Kryptonians like do birth and kind of how they set up, like how people live and everything. I think I want to say that I had read stories like that in the comics. I'm not a big enough Superman fan to have read all of them, but I feel like the bit about, you know, oh yeah, no one is born, you know, no one does live birth anymore on Krypton, and everyone is that there are only so many lines of DNA, etc. I think that was in a set of comic books which they probably pulled from. I actually don't know enough about the origin of Man of Steel's story, if it is from a set of, like, a specific set of comics, or if it was wholly, you know, invented for this. Do you know?
I do not know.
Yeah, I'm not enough of a Superman fan to know. But I did like the... I liked how they didn't really have to do Superman as Clark Kent, although I do love...
there was not much Clark Kent, and I like that.
As much as I do love Christopher Reeve's kind of Clark Kent, like, all of that is great. I think doing a movie where he's not Clark specifically was more interesting to me.
I enjoyed playing sci-fi TV bingo.
Oh.
When I was watching the game.
Yeah.
Because you got to see, within like 5 minutes of each other, you saw Hilo from Battlestar Galactica, Tamo Pennicket. And then you got to see Alessandro Giuliani, who was Gaeta.
Yep.
They were working together.
Right.
And colluding, then you also,
you could almost say.
Yes. And then Harry Lennox, who also worked with Tamo Pennicket on Dollhouse.
Yep.
That was fun for me.
That was good, yeah.
And then you get to always play, was it Chris Maloney or Elias Koteas? Which one is it? It's Chris Maloney in this case. But really, we know it could have gone either way.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I do agree with you that it does not feel as coherent. Definitely not as coherent as Avengers, and I think it could have had more.
And that might be an unfair comparison.
Yeah.
Because the Avengers was built to through multiple movies and has multiple characters in it. I think comparing to something like Batman Begins, it doesn't hold up.
Right. No, I agree. And I think it's certainly no Green Lantern.
No. It was better than yes, okay. It's better than Green Lantern. You've cleared the baby bar.
Yeah, right.
Congratulations.
I feel it was more, I mean, it's much more an origin story than a story on its own. And I think with the way that they kind of did it storyline wise, I mean, it's really hard for me to divorce it from the Christopher Reeve set of Supermans, especially because, you know, the whole thing with the first and second movie, you know, there's pieces of it there, right? There's the Phantom Zone, there's the Betrayer, it's Zod, you know, that whole bit of it is there. I mean, I like that they make no reference at all. There, as far as I know, there were no, not even in jokes of the original movie, which made me feel good. Like, they're not, you know, I don't need a wink. Right. This audience does not need a wink. We're happy to watch Superman in whatever form it is.
Right.
So I was pretty happy with that. I did like the LexCorp kind of
yes.
cameo, but only because it was, again, not necessarily indicating anything that, you know, that was there. It was just like a really cool little thing.
Well, they've got to have Lex Luthor in the next movie.
Yeah. So I'm unclear about their plans for another movie. It sounds like they did not necessarily build this one expecting a trilogy or something like that. I mean, I know the Christopher Nolan wrote Batman Begins kind of expecting it to be a trilogy. I don't know if that's necessarily the case here.
Well, it's made, what was it, almost $1 billion or $500 million or whatever. So it's probably going to get another one.
Yeah. I think I'm fine with another Superman movie, especially given that it is kind of its own thing. I don't think I want a Justice League movie. I don't think I want this crossed over with Batman.
I would agree with that.
I don't know if it meshes well. Another complaint that I'd heard, I didn't think of it at the time, but I'd heard for the movie, was that there is no lightness at all. There's very little. I mean, we don't need Ned Beatty running around, "Oh, Mr. Luthor," you know, necessarily. But I mean, I think that is a fair point. I mean, only because. I mean, but my concern is that they were making it so dark and so, like, rigid that it would, quote-unquote, fit in Christopher Nolan's universe for Batman. Although, even in that, there is more lightness in how stuff goes. I mean, Alfred was...
They need more Michael Caine.
Yeah, right, exactly. You and I have the same thought. And that's why this is a great show, ladies and gentlemen. So, I think more Superman is fine. A Justice League, maybe not.
I'm not as worried or not as excited for it as I was for the Avengers.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they make a better team
mm-hmm.
than the Justice League.
Cool. Well, I'm pretty happy with our debrief on that one. That sounded pretty good to me.
But, so, Man of Steel. B.
Yeah.
Give it a B.
It's a thing, clearly. It's good.
Yeah.
I think
I didn't feel cheated out of my money.
Right.
But that's not exactly the endorsement you want for a movie that's a big tentpole movie like that. I'm saving all my excitement for Pacific Rim.
Right. Don't go
So.
see it in IMAX nor 3D. It was not shot in either of those formats.
I did not do that.
It was shot and then converted to 3D. I found out later. I read actually that Zack Snyder shot it on film, like old school actual film, not even digitally. So I found that kind of interesting. I'm not sure what that kind of means, but
Yeah, with all the boatloads of CGI, what does that really mean?
right. But yeah, I think it was good. It has some goodness in it. Hopefully it'll that'll pan out in something else pretty soon. Do you know is Comic-Con coming up?
In July, yes.
Yeah, it's
Oh, it
this
is
month.
July. Yeah, it's this month.
Yeah, I know it's this month. It's pretty soon. I don't know exactly when.
It's usually like middle.
That'd be something to
I try
check
not to
out.
think about it too much because then it just bums me out that I can't go.
Yeah. Even if you could go, it would be like it's always so wall to wall crazy in there. I'm not sure if it's worth doing.
I gotta go once.
Yeah.
And they need
But
to
that's
bring
a good plan.
WonderCon back to San Francisco.
Yes, 100% agree.
All right, now that we've ended the show a few times, I think we should probably call it a night.
You got it, Brennan. I'll talk to you next week.